Hi, I'm Sam Stokes. Let's talk about exploring littoral space. Remember, littoral space is the coastline along countries, and it can also be, for this discussion, a wetland, a pond, that kind of thing. So today what we're going to be talking about is how to do data logging in storage, and a little bit about how this can map to your classes at school, if you're in high school, and how you and your friends can actually work on this without it being part of your schoolwork. So let's go ahead and get started. Let's take a look at the data logging and storage as we plan out and continue to work toward taking data from the littoral space or coastline in Dana Point. Just to point out, this material meets Common Core requirements. This material does meet the Common Core requirements for life science, ocean, natural resources, and ecology. And it meets it because this shows you, the student or an experimenter or homeschooler, how to create a project to solve a specific problem. Now, this isn't just about exploring littoral space. This is also about setting up equipment so that you can reuse it for other scientific work. Let's talk a little bit about designing your research. Research is usually done with others. Not always. I'm not working with somebody right now on this research, although there is a producer here that keeps me going. And you want to work with your teacher or your parent or friends to determine what kind of data parameters you want to measure. Now, in science or engineering, we have the one of the jobs of the engineer or scientist is to create the data parameters for an experiment. You're not always free to create the data parameters that you want or call them what you want. Sometimes you have to go to a government agency and review what kind of data parameters they recommend that you use so that when you share your data and you store it for future use, people in the future will understand what you're doing. Remember, science doesn't exist for today. Science existed in the past and in the future. So if I go and look at temperature data, say for climate change, and I want to look at that data, I need to understand how well calibrated those instruments were so that my statistical analysis or my own work can be continued. So let's take a look at some of the things that we might want to take a look at in the coastal research or littoral research. What's the sand temperature after the ocean wave pulls back? This is interesting, I think, because there's a lot of little crabs and little creatures that live in the sand that wait till the water pushes nutrients over them. And if the sand temperature varies very much, they die. If the sand temperature goes up to about 74 degrees, they'll die very quickly. It's a very hot day for them in that situation. They live in a temperature range of about 55 degrees to 70 degrees in Southern California. Now, another one that may seem a little silly is, how wet is the sand after the ocean wave pulls back, and how does it vary? But wet sand becomes like a liquid. Water is referred to as a compressible liquid. Water is referred to as a non-compressible fluid. Sand is referred to as a compressible fluid. Sand moves in and sand moves out. Now, as an engineer, this may be important if I'm building a hotel that's going to be located close to the beach. If the sand moves out quickly, this could underpin, it could cause a problem with my hotel. Or if I'm doing work with birds, if the sand moves out and there's only rocks, this may affect the birds. Now, how do you measure the velocity of the sand flow? Well, we don't know right now, but that's something we may want to work on. Okay, the data to be collected at the beach. Let's take a look at this. If we look at the picture here, we can see that where we're looking at as the wave pulls back is a very small part of the beach, but it's a pretty important part, but it's one that lacks research. It's not easy to get to for most people, and it changes very rapidly, which makes scientific work difficult to do. So let's take a look at the various data points that we would need to have. Number one, we need to know who the researcher is. We may need to come back and talk to you about how you performed your experiment, what kind of equipment you used, when did you buy it, who did you buy it from. All these things are very important. So researcher identity is critical. And this may be the contact information, that kind of things. Now, if you're under 18, of course, your researcher identity should probably be your teacher or your parent or somebody like that. Date and time. We need the date and time, and the date and time really seriously needs to be down to the minute. And we'll talk about how we do that in just a moment. Location. Where are you located? If we look at this beach, this looks like, on this picture, it looks like about a half a mile of beach. Where am I located along there? This could make a difference because there may be a reef or a rock or something like that that impedes the sand flow, and that could change my data. What type of collection are we doing? Are we doing a... the type of collection would be, what kind of experiment are we doing? Are we doing a sand flow experiment? Are we doing a temperature? Because we may take water temperature and air temperature no matter what we're doing with the sand, or if we're taking a clarity, seeing how clear the water is, that kind of thing. Determination of the best tide height. Now, tides vary along the coast. That seems kind of odd since the moon just moves things, a big ocean, things should, but the thing is that Dana Point may have a low tide of 0.09 one day, or 0.9 one day, and the San Clemente, which is just a mile or two away, their low tide may be 2 feet above zero level. So you need to know, you need to get that from some calibrated buoy, usually run in the United States by the NOAA. You need the air temperature in this case every single time, because the air temperature varies along the beach, I've noticed. Not a lot, but 2 or 3 degrees difference, and that's something that is an important data point. What's the water temperature where you're taking your test? That's a hard one. You're going to get your feet wet because you got to go down and take the measurement in the water and hold your temperature, or pull the water out and measure temperature very quickly. Now, the next one, not as hard, but could be a little damaging to your instrumentation, and that's, what's the sand temperature after the wave pullback? Another one is water clarity. Now, here we're only looking for particulate matter in the water, and this could give you an indication of the sand flow. What's the wind speed? This is going to impact sand flow because wind can push the sand back and forth. It seems odd, but I've seen it happen, and you get little waves in the sand from the wind if it's very high. You'll need an image. This will help you calibrate your, help people understand what you're doing or what you have done. Let's say this is the year 2015. In the year 2040, people are looking at your data and they're going, well, what was they really trying to do? And they can look at a picture and see what you were really trying to do. Now, most important, and one of the things that we have many difficulties with, is sensor calibration. Now, your sensor calibration can be done automatically. Many temperature sensors have ways to calibrate themselves automatically. But in general, once you get better at or become more involved in this, you may actually need to take your instrumentation to a special lab to make sure that it's calibrated. And the calibration allows the people in 2040 to make sure they know that you're taking good data, so that when they do your experiment again in the year 2040, it's repeatable. Because in science and engineering, experiments need to be repeatable so that we understand what you're doing and that we can make sure that what your work is correct. Okay, so now if we're doing the tide pool rather than the beach, as you can see from this picture, there's the high tide zone, a low tide zone, and then the submerged zone. So again, rich researcher identity, time, location. The variation here is the tide pool water temperature. And the best, the tide pool water temperature is probably the one variation, because the tide pools will warm up, the low tide pools will warm up over time, and that's an impact. Another one that you could add that I don't show here is maybe you can show the water flow into and out of the tide pool. That would be kind of interesting. So let's ask some questions. Why is it important to know the state of the sensor calibration? In this case, the sensor calibration allows people other than you to be able to repeat your experiment. It also gives an indication of the accuracy of your measurements. This is important. Science must know the instruments are precisely calibrated. What kind of software would you use to store your data? We haven't discussed this, but you might want to think about this. I will see how to use an Excel spreadsheet to store your data. And what is the identity of the scientist and why is the identity of the scientist taking the data important? So that the researchers who are repeating your experiment can ask you questions, or we know who you are. What kind of tools would you use to make the measurements of the littoral spaces? And that leads into our next component. Now, as we've discussed in earlier ones, we've talked about using the Arduino to collect data, and we're going to go over this again. So let's take a look at the process of collecting and sharing your data. So we're going to use a data logger, and you can get the information here at this link. This is the shield, and this has a real-time clock on it, and it has and then you have the ability to program your data logger because it will sit on top of an Arduino. So let's talk a little bit about this. Okay, data logging, what is it? Well, we need to data log the temperature, water clarity, and conductivity of the water. This will give us some data points. And so within a tide pool, we may go out and determine that the conductivity of the water is higher than the larger body of ocean water. And this may be because of carbon falling out of the sky, because of pollutants, and carbon has a conduction. And so now the water is a little more conductive. And this gives us some indications that maybe we need to go down and look at what's causing the higher conductivity of the water. Now think of conductivity as the opposite of resistance. Usually when you're measuring current or voltage or, resistance in fluids, it's referred to as conductivity. So what do you need to get started with the data logging? In this case, you can use an Arduino Uno, a special configuration of the Intel Edison board, or the Galileo board. I don't recommend the Galileo board because it uses a lot of power. The Edison board is interesting because it's small. There's a number of devices that you can use. The Arduino Uno is one of the lower cost ones, although Texas Instruments have some that are cheaper. They don't support the common shields. You'll need a data logger board, and the data logger board we'll talk about in a little bit. You'll need a USB serial connection to your PC, a 9-volt battery clip, a 9-volt battery, soldering iron, and a protective container. Now, you notice that I gave you a list. This is referred to as a bill of material. And a bill of material is a clause used by professionals instead of saying a list of stuff I need to do my experiment. So the bill of material should contain everything that you need, because I may contact you and say, I want to repeat your experiment. So if you're at Cal State Long Beach taking marine science and you do an experiment, then maybe somebody at University of California, Santa Clara wants to repeat your experiment. To repeat your experiment, they need to use exactly what you used. All right, so let's get started. Your data logger will need to be assembled. You'll hook up your Arduino to a 9-volt battery, and in the picture on this slide, you see me soldering the 9-volt battery directly to the Arduino. Normally, you use the USB to power the Arduino, but now we need to make it portable, and I don't want to take my Surface Pro 3 down to the ocean because the ocean can play really fun tricks on you. So I soldered the 9-volt battery clip directly to the Arduino. You can use a connection, but it could come loose during the rough surf, or it could come loose any way you slice it or dice it. So now let's talk about loading the, so now you have your data logger set up, and now you can, you want to work with the real-time clock. So this is the library that you would use, and you should see your, if you're using Visual Micro, this is what it will look like. Okay, where do I put the data? Well, I can put it into Azure, but that could be expensive. Office 365 is cheaper. Sometimes it's free. Trial versions are free. And but it's missing some of the important components that Azure has. But if all you're doing is putting data into the cloud so you can share it with others, Office 365 is certainly one way to do it. You can put it into an Excel spreadsheet and then share that with others, and then others can put their experiments into the spreadsheet, and so now you begin to pick up data from all over the California coast. Or you could put it on a web page. Wait, no radios? No radios on this one, not yet. We will be working toward these two crude-looking ICs over here on the side. These are the devices that are inside of your RC-controlled car. These are referred to as an RX2, TX2 devices, and these are what controls RC-controlled cars. They're very inexpensive, but you can only get them through China. They're not sold locally separately. But you could also just buy a cheap RC control car and desolder them and use them in other things, or just use the RC control car. We will be using GPS on another data logger in a future broadcast. Wi-Fi and Bluetooth or Bluetooth Smart, those will work, but down at the ocean, keep equipment to a minimum. So I would recommend just using the non-radio data logger, or maybe just the GPS so you can get the location automatically. So other sensors, as I've discussed, water clarity is always kind of weird. As you can see, this lady's pushing the disc over the side of a canoe, and it, when it disappears, the length of the rope gives the measurement of the clarity of water. We will have to come up with some other processes, and we'll probably use some sort of laser or LED to measure the clarity. Water conductivity, that's easy to do. We can use a resistance meter. A pH meter is a little more complicated. Hopefully we'll be able to get one that works, that's cheap, but they're not cheap, and they seriously have to be calibrated. All right, so this is the conclusion to data logging. We discussed how to build the simplest, most basic Arduino software using a data logger. Now, let's go into how and where we would store our data. Okay, we can store our data, as we said, in Azure. This means that we can have large number of users. We can have automatic notifications sent out to the users that an experiment has been performed and then fresh data is online. It's awesomely scalable. You could scale this out so billions of people could see your very interesting coastline work. But it does come with a price. Office 365 is very low cost, not quite as scalable as Azure, but certainly has a lot of functionality that you can share with a number of other field scientists like yourself using the Excel spreadsheet or just regular files. It can be programmed. You can program it onto the Arduino, which we'll be covering over a number of presentations. Or you can use OneDrive. It's free or low cost. You can put a lot of data up there. You can share stuff. Doesn't scale easily, so if you have hundreds of people following you, you may have to work out some process to use your OneDrive so that they can scale and see your data. As you can see, the Azure platform has a big number of capabilities. This is the Azure might be a place where you put information from research on coastlines from the southern tip of South America to the northern tip of North America. And you would have all kinds of data. You'd have people being able to do processing using Hadoop. Your storage could be in petabytes if you wanted to pay for it. So, and then your reporting data could be automated so that your data automatically gets sent to NOAA, to the European equivalent, and lots of things that you can do at a cost. So all cloud technologies come with a cost. So if you want to use them, there's some free stuff that you can use initially, but long term, everybody wants to get paid, including Amazon and Google. Now, you could use OneDrive, and OneDrive allows you to store your data like Excel, videos, and other formats. Store photos, audio, and all that. And it's a good way to go. You can have up to a terabyte with your Office 365, so you can store a lot of information. Now, with Office 365, not only can I display my information, I can automatically graph it. I can add it to my websites. I can perform mashups between different Excel spreadsheets, so I could have data from Chile combined with California, so we'd have a better understanding of what's green, you know, what's happening with their beaches there. So it's pretty interesting. So in conclusion, we can use the Arduino to take, record, and share data. We can post procedures and instrument design as part of the research, and choosing your data sharing tool is important and should include plans for changing storage systems in the future. Thank you very much, and that's it.